This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on September 16, 2025 in East Earl, Pennsylvania.
Well, good afternoon. I have the coveted speaking slot after lunch, and your bellies are full. And we've got a question. Is bigger always better? Is bigger always better? Maybe you should have been asked that question before you went through the food line. We could answer this question pretty easily. I think the answer to the question is no. But I have 40 minutes to spend. So we're going to look at it a little differently. Is bigger always better? When I was given that topic, I thought about it and I thought that's kind of a loaded question. When you say, is bigger always better? You are making an assumption. You're assuming that bigger is usually better, but there may be a few random instances where it's not, so we better poke around and see if there are some cases where it's not better to be bigger. So I did this. I'm a scribbler, not a great artist. I did some scribbling on the title. And I think this is actually a better question for us to think about. If the question is bigger always better? The answer is no, and no more needs to be said. Bigger is not always better. If the question is this, is bigger better? Well, then it depends on the facts and the circumstances and probably your individual situation. We have a lot more to think about, to chew on and discuss if the question is bigger better? There is something I was interested to know as I started thinking about this question. Is bigger better? Is bigger always better? And the question is, how should we live in the day and age in which we live? I'm not particularly interested in spending a lot of time wondering how I would live if I lived in the 1950s. Because I don't get to live in the 1950s. The fact of the matter is, I live today. This is the time of life where I've been placed, where you've been placed, and I need to figure out how to serve God, how to exercise stewardship in the day in which I live. So let's kind of lay this down as a premise right here. You don't get to live in yesterday. We actually live in a business culture. That is the culture that we live in. Whether you are in business or you are not, you do not consider yourself in business. Conservative Anabaptist people, in the day and age in which we live in a business culture. We live in a culture of prosperity. That's where we live. So how ought we to live? I want to talk about some terms, the term income and the term wealth, because understanding a definition of income and understanding a definition of wealth, it helps me understand where I sit in the day in which I live, and maybe it can help you understand where you sit. So we're going to be talking about income, try to define it. We're going to talk about wealth and try to define that. If we would be looking to secular culture to answer the topic question, is bigger better? Secular culture has an answer for that question, and the answer is yes. Bigger is better. In the Deacon and Trustee seminars that we do, Gary Miller is one of our regular speakers, and he often talks about the culture that we live in and the way that culture affects us. We live in a North American culture, and North American culture tends to be supersized. Everything is big, and it is better when it gets bigger. Gary lays out how homes have gotten bigger over the years. At the same time, family size has decreased. Fewer people need more square footage to be able to consider their house a home. Equipment gets bigger. Businesses get bigger. Meal portions get bigger. And Americans get bigger. We are accustomed, culturally acclimated, to accept that everything is going to get bigger. Do you think that the biggerness of it, the bigger houses, the bigger meal portions, is that because we have greater need than we had before? We weren't filling need. Or is it related to something else? I think the desire to grasp for more is a pretty deeply suited human characteristic. Even little children, an infant, you lay your finger in their hand, and what does their hand do? Their hand grasps to take and to hold. There's something in us that we have it in us to take and to hold. It's not just a North American thing. It exists in all cultures. The Bible talks about the sin of covetousness. What's covetousness? I think a simple definition would be it's wanting things that God has decided not to give you. God obviously has not decided to give me this, but I want it anyway. Do you know that covetousness is not a North American thing? It's not even a rich person thing. Poor people are as covetous as rich people. There are plenty of people who will help you grow bigger. I suspect some of you in this room have business coaches, and those coaches, they encourage you to grow. Maybe they even tell you you need to grow. If you're not growing, you're dying. You're shrinking. There are arguments for growth, but it's not my job to argue for growth. So understand, I think there are some valid arguments for growth. I am not here this morning to disparage growth, to disparage bigger in every circumstance. I'm here to argue the other side of the coin. So you're only getting one side of the coin from me, and you need to take that side of the coin and compare it with the rest of what you know. So let's talk about income and wealth. Income and wealth are two distinct things. The fact that you have income does not mean that you have wealth, and the fact that you have wealth may not mean that you have a strong income either. Income I liken to ability, your ability to get, your ability to earn. If you think about conservative Anabaptist people as a whole, they have the ability to get income. They have work opportunities available to them. Many of our people have multiple work opportunities. You probably have an employee that if he would quit working for you, he would have job offers within a week. He would not have one job to pick from. He would have multiple jobs that he could pick from within 1 week, because we live in a land of opportunity. There's plenty of work there. Many of our people also have the blessing of steady income. Do you understand what a blessing it is to have income that is steady? It comes, and it comes every week or every 2 weeks or every month, and it just comes, and it comes, and it comes. When you have steady income, you are positioned to plan ahead. You're not living hand to mouth. You can start making plans for the future, and you can learn to manage. Not everyone has the blessing of income. Just yesterday, as I was driving up here, for some reason, a picture of a man came to my mind. I was not even thinking of my topic. It was probably 15, 16, 17 years ago. I was in Haiti and doing some work there, and I became acquainted with a young man. His name I do not remember. He had very limited opportunities in life. And you think, well, yes, he lives in Haiti, not the United States, so he has less opportunity, fewer opportunities than we have. No, you don't understand. He didn't even have the opportunities an average Haitian had. He was around the place where we were having a meeting, and he was trying to be helpful. He was a young man. I would have taken him to be 18, 19, 20 years old. And he had a severe physical handicap. So he lived in a country where the opportunities were more limited for everybody to earn income. And he was the person who was physically handicapped. So he did not have the opportunity that the average able-bodied person had. He had to accept very menial tasks in hopes that that day he would get something to eat in exchange for sweeping up the trash or something for someone else. He had very limited ability to earn income. What about you? What type of ability do you have to earn income? Like, do you have ability? You wouldn't be at a seminar today like this if you didn't have ability, because you couldn't afford to get in. You couldn't afford to eat this type of food if you didn't have income. You have opportunity, you have ability. Some of you may also have wealth. Wealth, I'm going to liken to opportunity. Income, likening it to ability, the ability to get income, to get money. Wealth is opportunity or assets to make things happen. Do you understand that Amish and Mennonite people enjoy many advantages of wealth? You may not think of yourself as a wealthy person, but understand that you grew up, most of you anyway, with a work ethic. You were taught to work from little up. You have a tremendous asset that many people in the world do not possess. A learned desire to work, an appreciation for opportunity to work. A willingness to see work and go do it. Most of you earn wages, and on top of that, some of you enjoy business profits. If you take opportunity and then you combine opportunity with a work ethic, you end up with a financial result. So people who are willing to work and then they live in a country where there's plenty of opportunity to work, so willingness to work and opportunity to work, you marry those two together, and you know what the outcome is? The result? Over time, it's called wealth. You produce, and you produce more than is needed for your daily sustenance. Many of the people who are like you enjoy the benefits of owning property and tools. Do you understand that it is a benefit to own property, to be an owner rather than a renter? The type of people that you go to church with, they may start as renters. What percent of them end as renters? They end as landlords on the second or the third or the fourth property they own. The possession of property is a sign of wealth. You are the type of people who have tools at your disposal. When you have tools, you can work. A person who has a desire to work and no tools, they have a much more limited ability to earn wealth. Many of you got help to start out in business. You didn't start a business. You inherited a business. Now, some of you here, I'll grant, did start a business. But many of you inherited a business. Someone else had already gone through the learning curve. You come along and your interest isn't to start a business. Your interest is to improve the business that was handed to you, that you were given an inside track to inherit wealth. Across the board, I would consider Amish and Mennonite people to be wealthy people. I've seen it in our own church when someone from the community comes in. I think of a particular young man came into the church from the community, and he ended up leaving. And it saddened me that I think I understand the reason why he actually left. He knew he could never be one of us because we were too far above him economically. He was from the bottom. He had not been taught to work. He had no assets whatsoever at his disposal. And the poorest person in the youth group was so far above him economically that he knew he didn't fit in a place like this. That is a sad reflection on us. If our wealth inhibits our ability to help others. Income and wealth are not the same thing. It is possible to have one without the other. Many years ago, I had a contracting business, and I worked for a lady who I thought was a rich lady. For several years, we worked for her and her alone about 9 months out of every year. We were continually improving the large palatial estate in which she lived. I came to learn that she was not a wealthy person. Her husband had a very high income, and they spent all of it every 30 days. I knew that because if we turned in a bill at a certain time of the month, the check would bounce. Everything was mortgaged to the hilt. They lived at a very high level. They had high income, and they had no wealth. I think you know many people who have wealth but not high income. They've been very thrifty their whole life. Maybe they have worked hard and paid off a farm, and there's been great appreciation in land value. And today they are actually a very wealthy person. They have never in their life earned a large salary. But when I look across a crowd like this, I think I see both income and I see wealth. Before you think too much of yourself as a business person, as a financial success in life, you need to remember who you are. You are the people who in a 100-yard dash got to start at the 50-yard line. And then you win and you think you did it. And you started at the 50-yard line. You were taught to work from little up. You stepped into a business or onto a farm that someone else started. You lived in a culture that was entrepreneurial, that helped people start in life. You start in a culture where there actually is access to money. You can borrow it from your aunt, or you can borrow it from your grandpa, or you can borrow it from AF. But there's money available for people who are willing to work. You are the people who start at the 50-yard line. So don't think so much of yourself if you finish early in the race. You didn't start where everyone else in the world started. You have some unearned advantages of income and wealth. Don't you kind of look down on people who get handouts? Well, in a sense, you're the people who get the handouts. You were handed a good upbringing. Hopefully, you were handed a godly heritage. You were handed birth in a prosperous country and in a particularly prosperous corner of a prosperous country. You're the people who get the handouts. Do not be proud. Do not be proud. How should we feel about this? Okay, so Richie has put us on this guilt trip now. We are, in general, people who have income and we have wealth at our disposal. We have capital assets. How should we feel about possessing and enjoying the unearned benefits of income and wealth? Should we feel guilty about this? And my answer to you is no. Perhaps I am wrong, but I'm speaking, so I get to say what I think. I think the answer is no. Guilt is not the correct response. I think it is true that you have unearned benefits of income and wealth. Is it your fault? No. I do not believe it is your fault because God placed you where he placed you. He could have had you born somewhere else. He could have put you in a different family, in a different country, in a different time in history. But he put you where he put you, and God does things intentionally. You are where you are for a reason. Guilt is not a correct or even a helpful response. Instead, you should feel something different. You should feel a sense of responsibility. If I've been given these benefits, what then is expected from me? You should feel a sense of stewardship. I have been placed in the country I've been placed, in the business culture I've been placed in the church culture I've been placed in, and God has put me here. I've got some responsibility. What does he want me to do? Why am I here? Why do I have what I have? The past few years have been particularly prosperous, even for a prosperous country, and even for this prosperous corner of a rather prosperous country. The past number of years have been good. Has this taken God by surprise? Is it like God did not see this coming, that there would be these many good years in a row? The answer again is no. In his foreknowledge, God knew that some of his children would live in times such as these. He knew you would be here. He knew you would be in the situation you're in. And for that reason, in his wisdom, God gives specific instructions to the people who live in the day in which we live. I'd like to read just a few verses for you. These verses come from 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 to 19. Paul is writing to Timothy. Timothy is the bishop of a church, and he's giving him instructions to pass on to his church. He says, charge them that are rich in this world. That word charge is their word for command. It actually would be a word that would have been used in the military at that time. You are to give these orders. These are not suggestions. These are commands. These are what you are to tell the people in your church who are rich. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us all things richly to enjoy, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. He says to tell these people, the ones who are rich, to do not be high-minded. And I understand that in the original, the Apostle Paul wrote that twice. And in my English Bible, it only shows up one time. Do not be high-minded. The Apostle Paul wrote it twice. He said, do not be high-minded. Do not be high-minded. Do not be proud. Do not be proud. If you've got income and if you've got some degree of wealth, the first instruction for you, do not be proud. Do not be proud. The second instruction was, trust in God instead of riches. You know, there is a saying, what goes up must come down. It sure hasn't happened for quite a few years. But do you think the saying is still true? That what goes up can come down. That life is full of cycles. Cycles of prosperity and cycles of adversity. And if you have been in a prolonged cycle as a people, a cycle of prosperity, what is the only thing you can expect comes later? Whether later is 3 years or 30 years or 100 years, if there is a long cycle of prosperity and the Lord tarries, the only thing you can expect is that there will come a cycle of adversity. Do not trust in uncertain riches. Number three, what should you be doing? You should do good. You should be rich in good works, and you should be quick to share. With this first one here, do not be high-minded. In your business, is there any connection between growth and pride? And that is a yes or no question. And you answer it for yourself. I cannot answer it for you. In your business, exclude everybody else sitting in the room. In your business, has there been any connection between growth and pride? Yes or no? Scripture says, do not be high-minded. Do not be high-minded. The second point, your business growth, has it increased your trust in God or lessened your trust in God? Which of the two? I think it can be either one. You can either get a big idea of yourself and you don't need God as much, or when you look at the responsibilities that have come upon you, you can need God more than you ever did because you have more responsibility in this business. What about the third one? Do good, be rich in good works, be quick to share. What has been the financial result of growth in your business? If your business has grown, what's been the financial result? It's often said, if you want to know the truth about something, follow the money. Okay, so if your business has grown and if its business has prospered, where has the increased money gone? Did it go to personal consumption? Did it go to indulgence? Did it go to self? Did it go to church and charity? Follow the money. The money usually doesn't lie. If your business has grown and prospered, where have the increased profits gone? In Proverbs chapter 23, it says, labor not to be rich. Labor not to be rich. If you go to work for money, quit going to work. You would be better off spiritually if you quit working. If you're actually doing it because of a desire to be rich. Oh, yes, you need the money to meet obligations, to address needs, take care of your family, care for others. Labor not to be rich. Is bigger better? Scripture says, oh, I'm sorry, I got behind myself there. What percent of the profits have gone to personal consumption and what percent to kingdom work? At what point do you have enough? And every additional dollar earned can go to church and charity. You can still work. You can still grow business. But you have enough. And every additional dollar past this point can go to church and charity. Talk a little bit about mission drift. Mission drift is a gradual, almost imperceptible move away from the original founding purposes to something that is new and different. Peter Greer, Hope International, he wrote a book titled Mission Drift. It's a good book. I would recommend it to you, Peter Greer, Mission Drift. He talked about a time in the history of Hope International. They had been plodding along for quite a number of years, slowly growing their ministry. And they had an opportunity. A business came along. A large oil and gas exploration company was interested in the type of ministry work they were doing and wanted to become a very substantial ministry partner. They were excited about the way it would transform their ministry, not have to be nickeling, diming everything, all this money available. But there was one little catch. This company operated in a national and international market, and they said, you're going to have to tone down the Christianity part of this. We love the part about helping poor people and sustainable development, but the Christianity part is going to have to get a little quiet. And Peter Greer, he writes about this, and he was kind of surprised that it actually was a discussion whether they would do this or not. Because we can help so many poor people in the world. We just have to tamp down the Christianity part a little bit. And in the end, they decided not to do it. He made this statement. He said, without careful attention, faith-based organizations will inevitably drift from their founding mission. It's that simple. It will happen. He states it as a no ifs, ands, or buts. I wouldn't necessarily go quite that far, but that's how he states it. It will happen. They will drift from their mission. Well, that's a charity. You represent businesses here. If a faith-based organization inevitably drifts from its mission, do you think it might be true that a faith-based business could do the same thing? Like, what kind of reasons do you have to run a business? Why do you run a business? There are lots of different answers. Here are some common good answers. You run a business to provide financially for your family. Good answer. You run a business to provide a good work environment for your employees. Excellent answer. You run a business to provide service to the community. Good answer. What about when the business grows? What about when the funds increase? How do you keep your business from drifting whatever your mission was? I was given this advice many years ago. I'm a person I very highly respect. It was a lady administrator I worked under, one of the smartest people I've ever known. She told me to make and maintain a list of all the good things I will refuse to do. Make and maintain. Like, you actually write it down and you keep this list current. All the good things you will absolutely refuse to help do. You know, when you got something you want to accomplish, who do you ask? Busy people, capable people. Some of you are in that situation. You're always being asked to help with this and help with that and be on this committee, and can't you help with this project yet too? You maintain the focus of your family business by making and maintaining a list of all the good things you will refuse to do. That's a good idea for somebody else. That's going to take us away from our mission, what we are focused on doing. In your lifetime, you can always get more money until the very end, but you can never get back time you spend or the focus that you give to something. Don't waste your time and focus on things that are not of priority. I am, by permission, using Free Indeed Ministries as an example. That's a ministry here in Lancaster County, and I suspect a fair number of you in this room would have heard of Free Indeed. They have a very focused mission in a field of work that's pretty expansive. Could get into a lot of different areas. They enjoy strong financial support. They're not in a position of not being able to do things because the money's not there. If they want to do it, the money would be there to do it. They considered nationwide expansion. Well, why just do Free Indeed here? Why don't we just do it in all kinds of states? And they decided not to grow. Instead, so far, they have supported the creation of 5 other organizations. It's not that they did it for the other organizations, but they enabled 5 other organizations to get off the ground with either moral support, maybe financial support, logistical support, advice. Why did they do something like this? I talked to Manny Zook. He's in charge there at Free Indeed underneath the board of directors. I asked, why did Free Indeed decline to grow if demand existed and the funding was there? There's demand and there's money, and you declined to grow. So you can kind of translate this into the business world. The demand is there, and the money to do it is there. He said, we have our hands full to do our own work well. It takes everything we can do what we're doing now and do it to the standard that we consider acceptable. We're unwilling to lower the quality of the work for the sake of doing more work. Bigger is not where it's at. Number 2, He said, other people can be trusted to do work that matters. We don't have to do everything. You can actually trust other people. He said, there are so many qualified people who are willing to serve. They just need a little direction and support to get started on the right foot. Sometimes you have to equip them so they can live up to the potential they didn't know they have. We just have to help them get started and then get out of their way. He said, in as many words, I summarized it. He said, growth will not be allowed to dictate decision making. How many of you have been in a situation where growth dictated the decisions? It forced you to make decisions you weren't ready to make. He said, we have to be willing to shut down growth, in order to retain the ability to make objective decisions. Like, what actually is the best thing to do? We don't want the pressure of too much on our plate. And then he said this, and I did quote this one exactly. I wrote it down. I thought it was pretty substantial. I don't know if you agree with this or not. He said, if we were 20 years younger, we'd be foolish enough to think we could grow and continue to do what we're doing well. If we were 20 years younger, we'd be foolish enough to think we can grow and continue doing what we're doing well. Well, that's charity. What about business? I do mostly work with charities, and I relate with businessmen. Tell you about a certain large Anabaptist business. It's experienced what I would call top-tier financial success. It's now transitioning to the third generation. The person who founded that company had a simple goal, providing for his family. They needed some more income, had a large family. It was not his goal to become wealthy. In the second generation, the business expanded because they wanted to provide a good work environment for young people in the community, men in the community. Worthy goal. That business has now transitioned into third generations, and they've drawn a line, and they do not intend to allow the business to grow. They sold off a division. It lessened their footprint on the community, which they desired. It reduced the weight of responsibility they felt they carried. And they felt there was value in local control to a local company. Another community doesn't need us telling them how things need to be done. That can be arranged in that community. They continue to run the business they have, a very successful business, but they run it with the goal to push the profits to charity. We're going to continue running this business. We're going to make it profitable. We're going to improvise, deliver quality, because the money goes to charity. And the people walking in and out of the doors of that business don't necessarily know it, but you know where the profits go? The profits go to church, and the profits go to charity. These people have also told me, in this third generation, the third generation is broader, but I hear the same thing from all of them. They are unwilling to risk their children inheriting unearned wealth. They are unwilling to take that type of risk. Is bigger better? Well, is bigger bad? No, not necessarily so. There is a place for big businesses, certainly so. We couldn't even have a seminar like this if there wasn't a business that had a room that was big enough for all of you to sit in. There is a place for larger businesses. Is bigger better? No. It might be as good in some circumstances, but it's not better, and growth is a choice. Here are some questions for your business. You can answer. These are written in your book, so of course you can go home, but I hope you do like honestly answer these for yourself. Is there any connection between pride and growth in your business? That's a yes or a no. You write yes or you write no. Where do the increased profits go? To self or to the kingdom? Do you have your hands full doing your own work well? Would it be okay if somebody else did some of that work? Has growth dictated any of your decision making? Yes or no? You know, one of the ways you make more money and grow is to cut out middlemen. If you cut out a middleman to increase the profits, who would you cut? What's his name? What's his wife's name? The fellow you're going to cut to make more money. The guy you're going to cut out. Who is he? You care about him? Why does your business exist? Why did it exist? And has that purpose ever drifted? And then in closing, I have a little chart for you. You can circle a number here after some reflection. Where are you at on this scale? Number one is, I run this business. And I'm assuming you run it for God. I run this business. It's my responsibility. Number 10, this business runs me. Thank you for your attention.